Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Now your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to the show. Today we're talking about one of the hottest topics in government cybersecurity, zero trust. I caught up with Suzette Kent, the Federal Chief Information Officer, and Stephen Hernandez, the Chief Information Security Officer at the Department of Education, to discuss why there's all this buzz around zero trust. Let me start maybe in the beginning here. The zero trust is getting a ton of interest both externally of the government, and then I'm starting to hear a lot more about it internally. And maybe, Suzette, give me the starting point. The CIO Council did some work. ACT IAC did some work. What is around zero trust happening today, and why is it getting all this attention and discussion?
It is one of the important things that the CIO Council is focused on. And why it's important right now, especially for the council, is that the concept of zero trust and software-defined networking has been around, but the capabilities are starting to mature. And for us in the federal government side, while we're looking at transition efforts for EIS, we're updating identity policy, we're reviewing particularly data architectures and rules around access and trying to move to making data more available, and we're refactoring many of our applications as we move to the cloud, it's the right time for us to think about how we use the concepts of zero trust and the capabilities that are there in conjunction with these other transitions. And that was really one of the drivers. And we partnered with, ACT IAC because we wanted to bring in perspectives from what was done out of the industry, and not just the technology components, but how do you get there and what's the sequence in which you think about moving these different pieces. As I'll let Stephen talk about each of those pieces that I went through is part of the puzzle. So we want to have perspectives so that agencies are touching these other components. They are doing it with the long-term vision in mind. So that's why we thought the timing was right now. And, because many of the technologies exist today, it's in line with the other transformational activities that are going on. And it's been a great conversation, with the CIO Council, again, to set the path forward while they're making important decisions about the contributing components that are required in the Zero Trust Network.
I was going to say, before Stephen jumps in, I think, Suzette, you bring up a really interesting point that Zero Trust is not a technology. It's a framework. It's a concept. And I think that's also part of this discussion, that all these pieces, as you mentioned, EIS, I know you didn't mention CDM, but that's a piece of it. The IT modernization, the refactoring of applications, all that plays and creates this thing called Zero Trust. And just real quick, is that, for lack of a better word, was zero trust the end goal when you guys started talking IT modernization, when things started happening? Or did zero trust kind of come into vogue as you realized, oh, look at all these pieces that can lead us down to this path? I guess I'm asking the chicken or the egg question, right?
Let me say that modernization, right, was the goal. And zero trust is a modern framework, particularly around who's on the network and what they can get to. And it's advancing the way in which we look at who's accessing from where, how, and in our goal, our modernization goals to, use newer technologies and from a business perspective, make more data available. It's a critical framework for us to be able to have to protect that data and operate in the environment. So I would say, the goal is overall modernization. This is a critical technique. And I am going to ask Stephen to comment on this. I think that's what we heard from the council, is that it's a technique, a set of techniques that they wanted to understand more while they were touching the various moving parts and making sure that they were designing with this in mind where it's appropriate.
Yeah, absolutely, Suzette. You nailed it head on there. And what happened in the initial working group was, especially on the ACT IAC side, they started on zero trust networking and software-defined networking, really zoning in on that layer three of the OSI model. But through some very robust discussion, what we led to is when we looked at this challenge space through the lens of the PMA, especially that data and accountability piece and the IT modernization piece, we came to the conclusion it has to be bigger. It cannot just be focused at ZTN and software defined. We need to look at the entire technology stack and understand how a zero trust mindset and philosophy cuts through every single layer. And I think that with the ACT IACT report, that's what you see coming out of it, was we started at a pretty narrow scope, but ended at a discussion of, if we're going to do this right, and if we're looking at the PMA, the only way we can be successful is by being cross-cutting through all the layers.
Talk a little bit, Steve, a little bit, if you can, about the ACT IACT report. What were some of the conclusions that came from it, or findings, or how does this help the CIO Council and the federal government more broadly define its path forward for zero trust?
One of the great things about the work with ACT IACT, as Suzette alluded to, is we got some great industry participation. 28 vendors in the industry were involved in discussion, and six had a deep dive. And really what came out of it was there are some pockets of very mature capability in this space. So some of the vendors are very well advanced in particular areas like ZTN layer 3 and layer 7 of the OSI model, the application layer. There's some folks that do a lot of good work there. The big takeaways from us from an operations and strategy perspective is at the government space, we have to make sure, one, we understand the mission. Like, are we talking about high-value assets, or are we talking about public-facing websites with publicly available information? And how we apply the concepts of zero trust are going to be quite different between those environments. And ultimately, the big questions that came out are, one, what, if any, changes do we need to look at in terms of our federal approach to information security? And one of the hot topics that came up was trusted internet connections. Zero trust can dramatically change the way we think about trusted internet connections. And with our 3.0 approach, it fits in nicely. The timing is just opportune to say, let's do some use cases involving zero trust. The other thing that came out was we definitely need to do more work. This product effectively became a baseline as to where we're at in the market and where we're at in the federal space, and it actually generated a plethora of questions that now both sides, government and industry, we need to come back together to answer, to figure out here again, how do we tailor zero trust to optimize our IT cybersecurity and manage our risk in the enterprise?
You bring up TIC 3.0, maybe Suzette can chime in on this one as well. I know you guys set up some use cases in the draft policy. Is zero trust being added, or were they already a part of the TIC 3.0 use cases? Where does that fit in now to this draft policy?
A little bit of both. Some of those draft use cases contribute to where we're going. We are looking at adding more so that we can get more, you know, definitive. As Stephen laid out, there's multiple layers to look at, and how you put those together in what sequence and what sequence of maturity. He also mentioned assessment. That was one of the things that came out of the discussion as a way to look at, or a framework to look at your own environment to say, where am I on each of these pieces? And so say it's a high value asset. I may want to go really far,
right,
in the environment that I set up, meaning the structure of the various components of how access works. If it's a public-facing website, maybe not. So that has different implications for both maturity as well as cost. So there's a lot of things that we want to learn in kind of the small petri dish through the efforts at the council that we can then kind of industrialize and share across all of the agencies for them to use for their own purposes, and then absolutely will embed the particular learning, continue to update as use cases in the TIC policy.
We have to take a break. My guests today are Suzette Kent, the federal CIO, and Stephen Hernandez, the CISO at the Department of Education. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guests today, Suzette Kent, the federal CIO, and Stephen Hernandez, the Chief Information Security Officer at the Education Department. Today, we're discussing the recent efforts by the CIO Council around the concept of zero trust. The other piece of zero trust is identity management, and it's a big piece because, and I think, Suzette, you touched upon it earlier on, is who's on the network, what can they do on the network, and what rights, if you will, do they have? And we've seen this over the years as something called, you know, back-end attribute exchange, something that GSA tried to work on and had some success in pilots. We've seen this with, you know, through HSPD 12, the smart card initiative, and trying to, you know, ensure login and logical access. Where does the identity management piece fit when it comes to Zero Trust?
It's a big piece. Stephen and I are laughing because it fits all over and an observation, right? And so I would ask Stephen to comment after I finish this statement. Identity is a central component, and we can make it a big player or a small player in how we determine and set up certain approaches to access. And it's the reason we want to continue exploring, as Stephen said, more questions, because the combination of identity and location and role and responsibility, certain types of data that's, you know, out of pattern, in pattern, there's an extensive pathway that you could take it down. Right now, we have certain sets of identity criteria, but we don't have others. And so we have to look at commonalities of identity and what we can currently do and what we aspire to do, and as that's linked to identity. So that gets into things, again, like role, like patterns of behavior, like locations, and quite frankly, some things that as we are building and considering, it's information that we may have to put into our frameworks that we're not currently using today. What would you add to that?
Everything you
said. Did I oversimplify it?
I don't know why I'm here. You've got this. The parts I would build on, one, identity is a core feature of the Zero Trust mindset. And it's so important because, especially when we start talking about valuable data, we talked about Zero Trust networking. We decided in the working group, it's not so much who's on the network's important, but what's more important is what access to data do they have? That's the real question. And so we start talking about the data layer and how well can we identify folks that are accessing data and understand, is that access the right place, right time, and the right scope? And then continuously audit that. That was a big question that came up during the Zero Trust working groups. And ultimately, if we have high value data, there has to be a very high level of certainty of the identity that's accessing that. Public website, public information, I don't care who's accessing it, anybody can. And drawing those distinctions and having a mature approach to identity management is what allows us to start to enable most, if not all, the capabilities in the Zero Trust mindset.
Steve, do you get a sense, just from an education perspective, since that's your main viewpoint, is education, as an example, where are you in that continuum of identity? Because of HSPD-12, because of the work that's been done over the years across the board on identity management, where are you guys at with that as just one example?
Right now, we've done a great job of building out our requirements around HSPD-12. So we have a very strong identification platform as far as our PIV issuance and leveraging PIVs for authentication. Where we have opportunity is continuing integration of that type of intelligence around identity into our day-to-day operations, specifically at the data layer. And that's where we have the most opportunity. We have great visibility in terms of our security monitoring, the who's on the network, what devices they have, that type of question. But taking that identity and really drilling it into the data access, we're doing some of it now, but that's definitely going to be an area in the future where we're going to focus.
And Jason, I'll kind of broaden it across all of the agencies. A lot of the dialogue on that point that Stephen just made is that we've made good progress on who, but we have to systematically and operationally understand why they're accessing what data and what they're doing with it, right? That's the purpose. And how we get down to that next layer and we track it, we monitor it, and we understand and evaluate if it's acceptable and how we determine if it's acceptable in the realm of, you know, each agency's individual mission or the data access purpose is very important. And we have to answer these questions at the same time because we're working on the data strategy and making some of the data more widely available. If we're going to make those commitments to sharing and making it available, we have to have the confidence and the control as to who is accessing it and for what purpose.
And that obviously leads me down the path around the new identity management policy. It's been in the works for quite some time now. Is Zero Trust being included, added as an addendum, if you will, to the new identity management policy, or is that maybe a future version of it?
The zero trust approach is a framework, and identity is a component of that. We may put more discipline and more detail into identity so that we can drive more depth in our algorithms of access at some point in time, and that would go back into the identity policy. But zero trust in itself is not like, you know, will not be a component of the policy. What could be a component of the policy is the identity information that and characteristics that will become part of what is used in our longer term access and monitoring protocols.
I think you're spot on there, Suzette. And that's just that making sure that we have accurate, thorough, timely, and robust identity information that we can then feed into our zero trust engines, that's what's going to be important. And I think that's what you're going to see in this new policy.
Moving more broadly than just identity, which is a big piece of this, talk a little bit about the potential of zero trust for federal cybersecurity, improving it. I think I read somewhere in the last maybe year or so that some people say, well, if we had zero trust, if that framework was in place, there's a pretty good chance that OPM breach wouldn't have happened. And I'm not looking to go back and redo history, but because this administration and the last one has focused so much on high value assets, and because there's been so much focus on identity management with HSPD-12 over the last, I guess, three administrations now, talk a little bit about that potential of zero trust, of using that framework for federal cybersecurity.
The premise here is, and the ACT-IACT report calls this out quite clearly, that bringing this, if you had to start from scratch and you had greenfield to build, yes, zero trust maybe could have averted many things, but none of us are in that role. We're all in environments that are already built, these trains are running, and we have to protect them as we move forward. We're modifying the airplane while it's in flight. And with zero trust, I think there's the opportunity to actually optimize and in many cases find efficiencies in how we're doing security. But it's not a silver bullet. It's not going to solve everything overnight. And frankly, during transition, as we mature into zero trust, we can probably expect to see some costs go up simply because we're learning and we're going to transition and the vendors are going to learn how the government wants to see this.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Jason, I'll give you an example of the learning and the process. Some of the concepts require that based on your role and your responsibility, certain, you know, whether you call it permissions, entitlements, or whatever, are granted for certain types of data. Again, based on characteristics and criteria, who you are, what your role is, where you're accessing the information from, in what workflow you're doing that, meaning kind of what is the purpose. To monitor, capture all that, and to think about that, to set that up in the beginning and to monitor it in the back end, those are new capabilities. We don't do that right now. In the private sector side is very often the first thing that happens when someone gets a new role is a lot of that permissioning has to happen and it's role-based. Those are types of operational components that To Stephen's point, we have some of the technology now. We have to operationalize how we implement it and we manage it, you know, through the process. So those are some of the things where we will have new activities and we would, you know, largely have new costs. There's also components of information that we don't capture today that we could add to even strengthen what we're doing, but we have to evaluate, is that cost worth the investment? And, you know, we may go absolutely on high value assets. And on some of those others, we say, yeah, you know, not a value add there. So there's still a lot of kind of operational and return of value decisions that have to be made.
At one point, I know the CIO Council was thinking about a zero trust pilot of sorts. I'm not sure if that ended up morphing into this ACT-IACT report, but what are the next steps now that the ACT-IACT report is done? You mentioned the TIC 3.0, maybe some use cases. What other things is the CIO Council or Suzette from your office at the federal CIO are you guys thinking about when it comes to this broad idea of this framework of zero trust?
So we've got a couple of work streams that are coming out of this, We kind of already touched on one of them, and that's in conjunction with, you know, NIST and others. So we're looking at both kind of assessing where we are, what we currently have. As we said, some of these technologies are in place and what we can use quickly. There's also a second set of activities that I'll let, you know, Stephen talk about more that is being led around reference architectures so that and some specific guidance and in asking the question to one of your earlier points, are there areas where we might have to have some policy updates or some additional requirements so that we kind of have two pieces of what you should do and what you have, and we can share those with the agencies so they can have those as reference in their own planning activities. What would you add to that?
You got it. I mean, there's the folks out at the NIST Cybersecurity Center of Excellence, brilliant people, and they are fully engaged in this with a group of federal stakeholders. Many federal agencies are represented there. And then on the industry side, ACT-IACT is continuing to look at how they're going to engage in this space. And I think one of the things they're looking at is what type of playbook would the industry suggest agencies look at in terms of adopting some of these technologies depending on use case. And so those two work streams are working in parallel, but they're also intersecting at certain junctures as well to kind of spot check. And the NIST folks are really driving hard on proof of concept, what can work, and then how will that influence our policies. And the ACT-IACT group's really focused on making sure that the industry can get their voice in to make sure that we build what is possible.
Now, I could talk longer, but and this has been a great conversation. So let me just thank you guys. Suzette Kent, the federal CIO. Suzette, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Jason, for the opportunity.
And Stephen Hernandez, the Chief Information Security Officer at the Education Department. Stephen, thank you as well.
Thank you for your time. I appreciated it.
We have to take a break. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, we're discussing one of the hottest topics in government cybersecurity, zero trust. In this part of the show, I sat down with Mark Bunn, the program manager for the Trusted Internet Connection, or TIC, project at the Homeland Security Department's Federal Network Resilience Office.
Talk a little bit about where the Trusted Internet Connection, the new policy that's on its way out, plus zero trust, how does that all fit together in the roadmap of cybersecurity for the federal agencies?
Zero trust is the end goal that we're trying to get to. And because it is such a buzzword, we do try to avoid it because it's misunderstood in many different areas. So currently what we're looking at is you have an accreditation boundary, which is quite large for an agency. Sometimes they'll call it general support systems, where it takes up the entire agency as a single trust entity. And what we're saying is that's really not the entire crown jewels. Your crown jewels aren't scattered throughout your house. You really need to focus in. And so the first step of that was with the HVA program, identifying what the high-value assets are and where they are and what they are. A natural transition to that now is how do you protect those? And so we do have other programs at CISA that are doing that piece. And our piece is specifically on the communications between those different trust zones and being able to capture any cyber-relevant information that's inside of that traffic.
You use the term trust zone. What does that mean? Help me define that, because I think people hear it and be like, well, I trust all my network. And if you don't trust your network, isn't that a bigger problem? So what's a trust zone?
So a trust zone is a new term and concept. One of the things we looked at Trusted Internet Connections program is what does each of those words mean, and why are we using it in the way that we are? And one of the things we really identified early on was the term trust itself. We didn't have a real good criteria and information around that. So that's what we're doing with TIC 3, is really defining what is that criteria of trust in terms of risk management and the cybersecurity framework. There's a specific level of trust and specific things that you need to do to protect data, and how does this relate to the TIC program itself? So that's really what we're looking at, is how do we get that narrowed down? It could be a physical, a virtual, but the trust zone itself is a concept. It's not a physical network. And so today it's pretty wide, and our idea is as we get further into the future, it'll get smaller and smaller.
And the reason why the trust zone is pretty wide is because you have on-prem, you have cloud, you have mobile, you have all these pieces and parts that kind of make up what's inside that zone. And even for the tick policy, for instance, I know that for a long time that was focused on the network, the interaction between, you know, if you will, the private and the public parts of the agency. But with the move to a hybrid cloud, with the changing kind of boundaries, as people like to call it, that's why you guys are kind of refocused on that trust zone issue.
Exactly right. So what you have with a traditional network is you do have a very clear boundary between this is where my agency stops and this is where the internet begins. This is where my agency stops and internet 2 begins or other networks begin. When we start talking about hybrid clouds specifically, those boundaries go away. We start talking about software as a service as being an internal system. Those boundaries go away again. And the big question we had is, well, if the boundary's gone away, does the need to have a boundary-focused program go away? And what we've discovered through interviews both with the private sector and agencies is that, no, there's still requirements there. There's still things that need to be protected, and there's still things that we care about from a cybersecurity standpoint.
That's a great segue to the TIC program. But before I go there, just connect the dots for me, because one thing about Zero Trust and this idea, this concept that's kind of growing is that's not just one technology, but it's all the pieces that will make up Zero Trust. Eventually, TIC is one big piece of it, but you also have CDM and some other Einstein. How is DHS kind of viewing all those pieces so they all come together under this Zero Trust umbrella?
So I really wouldn't say a Zero Trust umbrella even. So there's a number of concepts that are out there. As far as what CISA's approach is going to be to that, it's probably a little soon for me to answer that kind of question.
Fair enough. Something to follow up with your folks later on. Let's talk a little bit about TIC now. The TIC 3 policy, the draft is out. I know Federal CIO Suzette Kent said the final policy is going to be out very soon, the ubiquitous soon from OMB, of course. Talk a little bit about some thoughts behind that. And as you guys were putting it together, one of the big areas that you wanted to focus on was come up with these use cases. And talk about how you went to develop these different use cases. And maybe start with a little refresher. What were some of those use cases?
The first use case, the most obvious one, is the traditional ticket. From there, you see things like email as a service. You see things like remote access, remote users, and things like that. The real big piece of it is what you see in our initial use cases are really what are agencies using the most of. So we look at the FedRAMP data that GSA has on their website out in the public, and we said, okay, what are the top technologies that agencies are using now? What's the biggest bang for the buck? Let's start with those initially, and then as agencies need additional use cases, we'll work on those.
And I know some people have pointed out, well, what about this or what about that? And you guys have some other use cases that are going to come later. Do you have a long list, and what would be some of those that would maybe toward the top?
Platform as a service it would be towards the top of that list. So there's two types of use cases. There are ones that are very, very agnostic in general, just like the traditional TIC use case itself. So you'll see infrastructure as a service, obviously software as a service, and platform as a service. So you'll see those service models listed just to have a real general. As far as other types of use cases, we actually keep that as open-ended as possible. So we want to do what's most important for most of the agencies most of the time. How about that? So hitting the most important pieces first, the best data we could find out there was in GSA's FedRAMP program to say, okay, here's what agencies are using, here's who's using the most, and let's start with those to get more specific with technologies. So that way we can say these security capabilities, here's the best way to implement that if you're using the specific provider's email as a service offering.
In many reasons, the use cases are there to give people that creativity, because I know there's some concern that, well, we just have to throw out the whole baby in the bathwater and start new. And the idea is, because agencies will be in this hybrid environment, they'll have on-prem, they'll have off-prem, they'll have cloud, they'll have mobility. What DHS seems to be doing is saying, we understand that
the breadth, if you will, has just grown and grown and grown, and we want to make sure that we can help agencies understand what they have to protect and how they protect it. And talk maybe a little bit about, if you can, that thinking of what went into kind of how do we make as many people happy as we can?
Yeah, so there's two pieces to it. So the first part is the agency's risk perspective, and that is the part that we can't really tell the agency what their risk thresholds are. That's something for them to determine within their own mission. So that is definitely a piece of the challenge. But the second piece of that is actually there's a federal enterprise, and the federal enterprise has a minimum level of risk that it can afford. We've seen that with many incidents in the past where that threshold may have been exceeded in some way. And so we really want to make sure that we establish a good, solid baseline for agencies to be supported. We don't want them to be so creative that they're dancing naked in the hailstorm.
It's a great vision that we all have in our minds. Give me the other piece of this is the architecture. For years, TIC really focused on the TIC architecture. What's the TIC architecture? What's the architecture reference model? And that is still there, but it's less, if you will, in the forefront of the TIC effort, and it's more kind of fun, I'll say, behind the scenes a little bit. Can you talk about what the changes of the TIC architecture or how that relates back to this trust zone / use cases?
Absolutely. So the TIC is dead. Long live the TIC. And one of the big questions that we had is, should we even still call TIC? Should we change the name because we're changing it so much? The real big difference is, instead of us dictating, here's what that physical environment looks like, here's what that network looks like, we're saying, here's the concepts. Here's what the trust zones are, and here's the capabilities you need to put when you're going from a high trust to a low trust environment or vice versa.
And a big part of that also is that you want the architecture to be agnostic. You want to, it's smaller. The reference architecture is a little bit smaller. And really the end is what risks are you facing in which part of your environment, and then make a decision. So it's less about put MTIPS here or put this type of software there. It's really asking agencies to think a lot differently.
Exactly. So particularly with security capabilities, we want those capabilities to be implemented where they get the most bang for the buck, and that's not always at the gateway. The example we usually use is DLP. When you're looking at gateway traffic, it's all encrypted. DLP doesn't provide a lot of value at that stage. For most agencies, they find deploying that at the endpoint or in the cloud environment gets them a lot more bang for the buck because they're not just looking at a bunch of encrypted data.
And actually, this takes us back around to the beginning of the conversation where we started with trust zones and understanding what agencies have and what they need to protect. How does the TIC policy kind of fall into this bigger picture? How does this kind of support this really long-term goal of establishing and protecting and creating these trust zones?
It is a continuation of a mission, and the mission hasn't changed. This is literally that the technology around it has changed, and so we have to approach things in a different way. So that's really the paradigm shift when we say, oh, things are totally different. The only thing that's really different is we found ourselves, we were once fish swimming in water, and now all of a sudden we're in the air. We need to figure out what wings are.
And is that reason is because of things like the cloud and the big push for mobility devices? Is that, we know the cloud has been driving the changes to TIC, but what else is driving this idea of zero of trust zones?
A number of technologies. So mesh networking, some of the advancements that we see in Internet 2. Hopefully that will come about. Some of the things that we see in IPv6, as well as AI and neural nets and how those are set up and how containment might be an important issue in the future.
And the other piece of this is, as agencies begin to roll out the new TIC policy, what's DHS's role going to be to help them to kind of support those new needs or the understanding of the use cases?
The same as it has been. So we're definitely here to assist agencies. The example we used to always give is, we're the firefighters, not the police. So we're definitely here to help. We want to make sure that the houses that they have are safe and not catching fire, obviously in the cybersecurity world. So that's definitely our primary focus, not just large agencies and not just the CFO Act agencies, but particularly the non-CFO Act agencies that have very unique and specific missions.
When the new policy comes out, you guys are going to get probably a ton of questions. You're going to get a lot of vendor interest. Do you have plans yet for a communication plan? Do you have you guys start talking about what the how to ensure people know where to find information, but also if they have questions, what if they have, you know, where can they go to kind of find out more information besides the DHS and CISA website, of course?
At this point, I would say stay tuned.
Okay. So something to we can follow up on later. I guess the last piece of this, and which I think is part of the discussion, is when agencies, do you have examples or do you have any current use cases that you can point agencies toward? And if you don't want to mention them specifically, I understand that, like a specific agency, but are there use cases out there that there are some agencies that are ahead of the curve right now?
So the most important piece of that is each agency really does have different elements of risk that they have to be concerned with. So I really wouldn't encourage one agency to completely pattern themselves after another. I wouldn't specifically tell the DOJ to do everything like the Small Business Administration does, because they have very different missions, and it's something that they have to look at their mission first. What's the most important thing? What are we trying to accomplish? How are we good stewards of the taxpayer dollar? And now, how does TIC support that?
And on the other hand, the vendors are also going to be very interested in this. What's the message to vendors? Because they're going, how can we support this? How can we? And as you and I know, this concept of zero trust networking, the zero trust network is a big buzzword. So what's your message? What's the DHS CISA message to vendors as this TIC policy and 3.0 and zero trust idea rolls out?
Engage with a customer agency to get them to recommend and actually write up a proposal for a pilot with us. We definitely want to pilot with agencies who are working with these different vendors' products, because there are millions of vendors out there. you know, obviously at this stage, we can't sit down with each and every vendor and come up with a use case for each vendor. But we are working with agencies specifically closely through the pilot process that's laid out in the policy. And so we definitely want to encourage agencies, you know, to work with us if they have something that they're doing that's new and unique, or if there's something in current TIC policy that's hindering them in some way, we definitely want them to pilot.
We have to take a break. You just heard from Mark Bunn, the program manager for the Trusted Internet Connection Project at the Federal Network Resilience Office in DHS. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, we're talking about one of the hottest topics in cybersecurity, zero trust. In this part of the show, I sat down with Jeanette Manfra, the Assistant Director for Cybersecurity at the DHS Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA.
Just from a very, very high level from where you sit, what are you guys looking at from that perspective and how to start kind of communicating that to the agencies? CDM's a piece of it, Einstein's a piece of it, TIC's a piece of it, but the framework that or the umbrella that all fits under to create this idea of zero trust. How are you guys communicating that concept?
I think with our approach throughout the last couple of years, really, and across the board on IT, not just security, modernizing all of our infrastructure, and it's really giving us an opportunity to think about how the government architects its systems differently. And so whether you're talking about cloud deployments or modernizing your data center internal, the idea of there are places where you're just never going to you're going to have more trust in some places than in others, and being able to operate in a place where whether you call it a trust zone or a zero trust network, but being able to build those architectures and those systems build what I like what Mark called a trust zone, and knowing you have certain elements in place to achieve that trust. And so that's kind of what we're thinking. You know, if you're thinking about systems where they have to be open by their very nature in order to do their job, in order to support your function, you're going to have a different approach than a system that can be completely closed off and nobody needs to be able to access it from the public internet. So different approaches.
Do you get a sense that as you guys are putting together these different tools and helping agencies access the different tools, that's the end, the long-term end result? I mean, again, if we talk about this in 3 years, 5 years from now, zero trust, trust zones will be a more common phrase. Is CDM, TIC, again, Einstein, all the other pieces and parts are all pieces to that framework?
Yeah, I do think it will be a more common phrase. I think it's picking up some more. I think... to me, that's more an architecture sort of question and design thinking, which we are trying to push that more as well. A lot of our systems have been developed, different. One part was developed for one thing, and then someday somebody decided to connect it to something else. And so there's been a lot of really great work in some agencies around thinking about enterprise architecture, thinking about the business processes. How does the technology support the business process? And so we want to add security as a part of that conversation, and there's some solutions that the concept of a trust zone or zero trust network, that's where it makes sense, and it in fact makes a lot of sense. And there's other areas where they may not necessarily have to go down that design route, but I do think that there's a lot of promise in that concept.
You brought up one of my favorite topics, architecture, so I'll have to nerd out on you for a second. But the GovCar approach, yes. that effort, can you just give us an update of where that is and how that's kind of leading you or leading agencies down a path of understanding their architecture and then potentially in long term creating those trust zones?
Mm-hmm. Sure. For those who may not know, DoD started with a similar concept, and it was the idea of taking the MITRE ATT&CK framework and using that to assess your capabilities and to see sort of how do your capabilities stack up. And so we looked internally and started just at our own internal systems, and where is the National Cyber Protection System or the Einstein part of that? How does that stack up against those threats? How well are we covered there? How does CDM stack up against it? And then we once we completed those first couple spins and looking some of our internal capabilities, we started looking at, what would a notional cloud architecture look like and how could that stack up? Where might there be some gaps in that? And so what we're looking at as going forward is, as we kind of went through each of these spins, assessing each of these either an architecture an existing capability, the next step for us is looking at what are the right material and non-material solutions to cover down on gaps. So do we need to deploy a technology or do we need to issue a policy like a directive to cover down on a gap? We haven't done an assessment against a zero trust architecture. That's a good idea, and maybe something that we'll consider. But I would go back to before is that the concept of trust zones being a part of any notional architecture as you build out throughout the entire agency or even just your piece of it. I would encourage people to think about that as a part of their deployments.
That's all the time we have for today. My guest was Jeanette Manfra, the Assistant Director for Cybersecurity at the DHS Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA. I'm Jason Miller, and you've been listening to Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network. Tune in Thursday mornings at 10 or subscribe to this show on iTunes or Podcast One.